At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. This is a special Best of Caller Questions InvestTalk compilation program. Remember, the InvestTalk phone lines never close. Please call with questions. 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART. They will be played and answered on an upcoming InvestTalk podcast.
Welcome to InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. We try to bring you useful information and answer any questions you might have, as long as they're financial. 888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278.
Let's go to John in the Bay Area talking about rental properties.
Hey, Justin, how's it going? I heard Steve last week talk about renting versus buying, and I purchased a property about 10 months ago through a brokerage which gives you a below-market interest rate. My lender is Bank of America, and they said after 12 months I can rent out the property. However, the broker's contingency is that it has to be owner-occupied. I was wondering if I rent it out, will the lender contact the broker to not let them know I'm renting out the property?
It's unlikely, to be honest.
Okay.
It's unlikely.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it. They want to make sure that you're paying the mortgage. That's ultimately what they want. And so will they tell them? Maybe. And maybe they won't, and most likely they wouldn't do anything even if they did tell them. But I think both are unlikely. So I wouldn't worry about it too much. So it sounds like you're living there right now, and then you're going to turn into a rental?
I'm hoping to, because I don't really like living here that much, but I'm just a bit nervous because I did sign some paperwork saying that if the brokerage finds out that I'm renting it, there's a $25,000 fine and an automatic foreclosure. So I don't want to do anything that causes me issues in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely consult with more of a real estate attorney with that, and then look at that verbiage and make sure you don't get hit with that. But you know, it's a good lesson to everyone out there. When you're committing to a property, you want to make sure you really love it, especially in an environment like this. Did you move from a different area, or is this something that you lived there for a while, lived in that area for a while?
I called you guys about this house a few months ago, but I lived in the East Bay area, and I moved to Suwannee County in Vallejo, and I don't really like living here.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really want to hang on to the place. So I'm just trying to see what my options are.
Well, you can always sell it.
Yeah, I could, but then I would take a loss. But I think I'd be better off selling it if I can't rent it out, because I wouldn't want to live here too much longer.
Got it. Okay. Well, good luck. Yeah, I would talk to a real estate lawyer and have them look over those stipulations and advise you, because obviously I don't know enough about it to really give you the perfect advice, but I would definitely consult a professional. Thanks for the call.
Okay.
And that's a great lesson there. And this is what I've been saying for really the past 2-3 years. For our listeners, clients, and saying, you know, when you're going to buy a property, I think this is going to be for the next 10, 20, 30 years. You know, we talked about interest rates being in a 30-year up and down cycle. It's typically how interest rates move, 30 years up, 30 years down. This recent cycle is a little bit longer. It was exaggerated, closer to, 35 years from the peak. And back in, 82. And so you're now in an environment where interest rates are going up. And that means something very different for owning a property. It means that if you're not guaranteed price appreciation anymore, because you're not going to have interest rates consistently moving down to inflate the value of properties. That's just not a scenario that's likely to play out going forward. Our interest rate's going to go, you know, the mortgage rates were, let's call them 20% in the early 80s, and then they went all the way to 3%. Are we going to go to negative, what would that be? What would that delta be? Negative 14% over the next 30 years in mortgage rates? Probably not, right? So best case scenario, mortgage rates are going to fluctuate between 5 and 7% for a long time. I think that's best case. Worst case, you get, you know, mortgage rates back into the, you know, low teens. And probably not happening anytime soon, but could that happen 15 years from now? Sure. So when you're committing to a property, it's a big commitment, and you need to make sure all the boxes are checked. I've said this consistently. All the boxes. Because you don't want to be like that caller, like John, and saying, oh, well, now I'm upset on the property, and now do I rent it? Can I rent it? Should I rent it? No. The easiest thing is be patient. It's an environment where, unless you love it, I just bought a house, right? I love it. I don't really care whether the price of the property goes up a little, down a little. Don't care. I'm going to live here for a long time. So, you know, I don't worry about it. But for somebody else, for all of you out there, if you're going to buy a house, your own personal property, you need to make sure that it checks all the boxes. And then when it comes to owning a rental property, right, you need to make sure that your yield is much higher than your cost of capital, the cost of the mortgage on that property, at least by 100 basis points. And then you need to know the surrounding economy is going to do fairly well. You need to really have all your numbers dialed in. Especially when you can go get CDs at 4.5%, or go buy corporate bonds at 7%, right? Much better alternatives today than there have been in the past, especially for your cash and the value you have stuck in rentals.
You can call right now and be part of the program. Let's hear about what your talking point is. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278, and you can get through right now.
When listener questions are played on the InvestTalk podcast,
how do you guys determine a value stock?
The caller voices are amplified many thousands of times.
Just wanted to get your opinion on JP Morgan and BAC.
How do you see this looking forward?
I'm 25 years old and have a question about retirement funds.
And the unbiased answers from Justin Klein.
That's why it's trading so cheap, because there's a lot of regulatory risk here.
And Steve Peasley.
I kind of like it here. If I was going to buy Tyson Foods, this is where I'd buy it.
Benefit the entire InvestTalk community.
Thank you for what you guys do.
That's why 24/7, rain or shine, no matter how simple or how complex, your questions make a difference.
Symbol BKE, what's your outlook?
And InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. So don't forget to call 888-99-CHART.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
So when people take the time to leave an Invest Talk podcast review on iTunes, we'd like to thank them with a courtesy effort to get to their questions quickly. So this is from Clont12. How much cash? I often hear about the big investors like Warren Buffett sitting on large amounts of cash. I don't typically hear average investors talk about doing that. Seems most of us think we should have all our available investable funds in the market. What percentage of our portfolio should be held in cash? Well, that changes over time, everybody. You don't know for sure what you should have any one time in history. And some of it has to relates to you, how much cash you feel comfortable having, or that your needs for the cash. But if you're a typical investor and you want to be in the market most of the time, you would never be out more than, I would say, 20 to 25% cash. You'd never have more than that. You're mostly invested. And then that 20, 25% cash is for investing, not for just sitting in cash. For investing, you know, at an opportune time. And an opportune time is at the depth of a recession. Now, we talked about Berkshire Hathaway sitting on what? I think it was, it's billions of dollars. I know how it's billions. Okay, and they're sitting on it. Why? Not because they don't want to be invested, because they can't find enough value stocks they want to invest in. I think Warren Buffett's most recent purchase or recent purchases is in one of the, I think it's Occidental Petroleum. You know, I think that's, you know, billions of dollars into that one stock, by the way, a lot. So I can't answer the question specifically because I need to know what you feel comfortable with, and everybody has to ask that of themselves. What do I feel comfortable with? And, you know, at this time, I would have more cash than normal simply because, you know, we might have opportunities for better pricing. Last year, we had a 20% correction in the S&P 500. Okay? I wouldn't be surprised we have another correction this year. And that's a correction to invest. Okay?
The InvestTalk Voice Bank never closes.
I have a question for you about Amazon.
So your questions keep coming.
I have a question about P.E. ratios.
And that's okay, because Steve Peasley and Justin Klein specialize in unbiased guidance.
If I'm looking at a dividend company, I'm looking for consistency of earnings and dividends.
Your standard daily chart typically goes back 1 year.
Steve and Justin are fearless, so don't forget to call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
Now let's go to Joseph in Kentucky. He wants to talk about index funds.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So I'm 44, just turned 44 a couple days ago, and I've invested in SPY since I was like a teenager, and I transitioned over to Vanguard's Total Stock Market Fund. But my uncle, God rest his soul, after the financial crisis, he said, just if you're going to do a single stock, he said, and, you know, being from Kentucky, he said, put your money in Churchill Downs, CHDN. And I've been putting money away since right around the financial crisis. Never have sold. It's, you know, a lot of people don't talk about that as a stock, but it's been killer over the years. And I think it has a really good moat, but obviously there's competition in that sector or in that industry with gambling. But Kentucky recently legalized sports gambling. I was just curious, from your professional experience, it's done really well for me over the years. I think it still has a good run left in it, but I was just curious what your professional thoughts based on the stock and the company going forward, maybe for the next 5-7 years.
Well, we had a call on this, I believe, last week, and, you know, it's obviously having nice growth, and the gambling trends around the country are to become more open and allow people to gamble more in more areas besides just Nevada and select Indian reservations, et cetera. And I think that's just a trend. I think it's going to happen with a lot of, call them sin industries, right? From cannabis, right? Probably going to be legalized at some point. And, you know, this is just part of that trend. And so you're right, they do have a good economic moat. They're the name in horse racing, right? And so I think this is a solid name. Is it a bit expensive right now? Probably. But earnings continue to ramp higher and expectations continue to go up. So, you know, I would worry for you. It sounds like you've been putting a lot of money away in it. So it's probably maybe too overweight your overall portfolio. So in good times, you know, I've learned throughout history that in good times, that's when you want to be thinking about trimming your position. Obviously, from a tax perspective, you want to keep an eye on that and make sure you're not selling too much and creating too big a tax problems. But these times are when you want to slowly diversify into big moves higher. So I don't know what percentage your overall liquid assets are. You probably want to keep that less than 20%, hopefully less than 10% really, of this particular name. But I see no problem in the near term. Just know that, you know, with the legalization of gambling, that, you know, does another name come in and try to usurp their stranglehold on the horse racing market, right? Is it MGM? Maybe they find it as a growth driver, and they start to invest in horse tracks throughout the country, and that could, you know, create a big competitor for them. And that's always a possibility. This is what business is about, right? Capitalism is about. It's about competition. And right now, I don't see a big competitor to them, so I don't see anything near term. But know that down the line, that certainly can happen. And that's why you don't want to get overexposed to just one name. Thanks for the call.
You're listening to Invest Talk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. We want to answer your questions. Our listener line number is always ready for you. 888-99-CHART. Beginning our experience, we're here to answer your question.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Hi, Steve and Justin. My name is Brent Davis. I'm calling from Sarasota, Florida. I've been a longtime listener, and I just remember listening one fateful day in October when Justin said, I think we've reached bottom. And ever since then, I've just been kind of paying attention and noticing that, in fact, that was prophetic. And I was just wondering, what did he see that he could share with the rest of us that indicated that we had, in fact, reached a bottom? Thank you for your time. I'll look forward to listening on the show. Thank you.
Well, you know, I remember talking to Justin around that period of time, and we were discussing at length why we felt that the market probably is done with most of its fall. And it fell about, 19%? The S&P 500 fell to 19%. The tech-heavy NASDAQ fell more than that. Value stocks fell much less than that. So it was a range from, 10, 11% fall to, 30% fall. But the S&P was about 19. And we felt, that's historically about what it would fall in a bear market. A little less, maybe a little bit more, but we're getting close. We thought we were getting close. We felt that the Federal Reserve is probably going to raise the rates a few more times, but are getting close to being done, and that we will see inflation this year start to come off its high, which it has. And we were talking about this at the end of last year, what we projected for this year. Now, that doesn't mean we're still in our bear market. It's still flumping around, having trouble getting off the ground. We may have a retest of the lows. It might go lower than the lows, especially if the debt ceiling issue doesn't get straightened out, and we go in default on some of our treasuries or whatever. Yeah, the market, if you remember right, the last time that happened was back in the 2008 period. And when there was no agreement between the House, Senate, and the President about a debt issue, the market fell 7%. It was already in a bear market. Now, the market fell 7% in one day, the S&P 500. Fell heavy in one day. And then 3 days later, they had an agreement on the debt ceiling. That could happen again. That could happen again. So it doesn't mean it will, because no one knows. If anybody ever tells you they know what's going to happen, they're lying. No one really knows. But we both feel that the market is probably is going to put it in the bottom this year, test the rebottom maybe that it made last year, may retest that, and may go lower, but we're getting awful close. So this is why you kind of start looking to buy something. Okay?
This is Invest Talk, made possible by KPP Financial, where they describe their services as independent thinking, shared success. And this philosophy is why KPP Financial can be of great value to investors. KPP principals Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are committed to unbiased guidance. They don't upsell clients into expensive and questionable investments. Instead, Steve and Justin provide honest opinions and proven strategies based on the individual's current portfolio and risk tolerance. Working with KPP Financial, you can be assured of consistent dedication toward the goal of helping you achieve financial freedom. You can get things started with a phone call or a simple message through investtalk.com. The Invest Talk Radio and Podcast continues now. The phone lines are open. Call with your questions. 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART. Let's go to Brandon in Ventura. Hi, Brandon. How you doing?
Hello. I'm doing great. Hope you're doing well. Thank you so much for taking my question.
Thank you.
I've got a unique situation. I'd love your advice. So I got a I know I'm going to have some big purchases. I've got a wedding coming up, and I was able to take a credit card offer with about 15 months of 0% interest. And been carrying a balance now, so I paid for the pre-wedding. That's happening next year. My current balance on it is about $8,400, all 0% interest until June 16th, 2023. So what's nice is I have a minimum payment of $34 a month, and I have the money to save. I did the math, about $8,400 divided by 13 months from now would be about $640 a month. I want to just make the minimum payment from that, and the other $610 I want to either put into, I've got some high yield savings accounts with interest rates going up around 4%. I've thought about CD accounts, or I was thinking of either some treasury bills or treasury notes with the $610 every month that I could, you know, after 13 months, I'll pay off the June 16th statement. But in the meantime, in these next 13 months, try to do that $610 a month and get a little bit of something until then. I wanted to get your advice.
Well, all that sounds pretty good to me. I might suggest that since you have 0% interest on the outstanding credit balance, you might want to look into see if you can get that 0% interest by moving it to another credit card. See if it's out there. See if they have any of those offers out there. And you know, I've seen people move it around several times just to keep the 0% interest. It's a pain to always have to apply to another credit card, blah, 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 blah. And you know, some of them don't like it when you do that, but too bad. Don't make the offer then. But I do like this money you're saving is for a wedding, right? It's kind of money you're going to need. So you got to keep it pretty liquid. And treasuries, short-term treasuries is a pretty good bet because you still make a decent return and it's still very liquid. And I think that your strategy is sound. So I have no problem with that strategy. Sounds good to me. Yeah, you would only want to put in longer-term investments if you know you didn't have to use the money or a wedding or anything else. So I like it. I like it. It's smart thinking, and I think you just keep doing it. Okay, Brandon?
All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks for the call. You can call right now and be part of the program. Let's hear about what your talking point is. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278, and you can get through right now.
Let's say you've been thinking about learning a new language. Okay, why? I mean, how would it come in handy? And where would you want to use it? Could it be that you have an upcoming international trip? Or maybe you want to connect with family members or friends from a different culture? I think you should know about Rosetta Stone. With millions of users, it's been the world's most trusted language learning program for 30 years. Rosetta Stone is available on your desktop or as an app with audio companion and the ability to download lessons offline. Rosetta Stone truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. It has a built-in, patented speech recognition engine called True Accent. So as you practice speaking, you'll get feedback on how well you pronounce words. With Rosetta Stone, you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's an intuitive process designed for long-term retention. You really learn to speak, listen, and think in your new language. Rosetta Stone is an amazing value, so your special skill set is within easy reach. You know you want to do this, so don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, InvestTalk listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off now at rosettastone.com/today.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Paul in San Francisco. How you doing, Paul?
I'm here again.
Good.
I want to talk about gold and silver as an investment. I see a lot of these commercials for these well-known celebrities and actors and actresses that are in gold and silver, and I think it's not a good investment, but it's probably better in cash. So what do you think about those? People shouldn't buy that, I think.
Yeah, gold. I know there's a lot of gold bugs out there, but gold is one of the worst long-term investments there are in this, you know, as far as gold and silver. If you talk about 10, 20, 30 years, compare that with the stock market, and stock market's far, far out performed that. Now, I will say this. I think gold has had, you know, they've had a pretty good year. Last year, they had a terrible year. This year, they seem to be getting, gold seems to be getting better. It's $2,062.70 closed today. Actually, this one just is still trading. It went down 10 cents just now as I'm looking at it. So it's got above the 2,000. It's right there ready to break out above its old high. It made, what was that, a few months ago probably. Let's see. Not that long ago. I think it's going to break out. I think it's going to have one more run. I said that last year, and it really didn't run last year, but I still think it's got one more run in it, and then I'd get out. I mean, if you like, Paul, gold is pretty to hold. Coins are really neat looking, and it's fun to have them and display them or put them in your safe because you feel comfortable. But as far as an investment, not so good. So,
right.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it, Paul. Let's get back to Invest Talk Voice Bank for a question that came in earlier. 888-99-CHART, Long Island, low contribution limits.
Hello, Justin and Steve. First of all, love the podcast. My name is Andy from Long Island, and I was wondering if you had any insight as to why the government put such a low contribution limit on simple IRAs at $17,000 a year or $13,500 for someone under 50 years old, as opposed to a 401k, 403b, and so on. I'll be listening. Thank you.
How about because we have not very good legislatures? You know, why wouldn't they make it the same? This is simple IRA. Okay, everybody, that's a title of a type of IRA. He's not just saying IRA, they're simple. No, it's a simple IRA, which is a little bit different. It's not very well known and not very not used that often. But they say, well, used many times for self-employed people, simple IRAs. He says, why isn't the limits that I can contribute to my simple IRA, why isn't the same as a 401k or an individual 401k, which is different than a 401k for a company? There are individual 401k. So why are the limits different? And they really shouldn't. There's no common sense as to why they would, other than we have lazy legislature who didn't, you know, make it the same. Why not make it the same? It makes it easier for everybody all around. But no, we don't want to make it too easy. We want to make it complex. That's the only reason I can give it, because there's really no valid reason. There really is no reason it should be different. Okay?
This is InvestTalk, made possible by KPP Financial, where principals and InvestTalk hosts Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are independent financial advisors. For clients, they are fiduciaries. Steve and Justin have a duty and a commitment to always place the interests of their clients ahead of the firm. This is different from the way many other organizations operate. And one way you can realize the benefit of an association with KPP Financial is to know that KPP practices parallel investing. This means that the personal investment accounts of KPP principals participate with client investments at equal prices and percentages. It's an important difference. You can learn more anytime at investtalk.com. Or reach out to Steve Peasley and Justin Klein by emailing or calling their Irvine, California office. The InvestTalk radio and podcast continues now. The phone lines are open. Call with questions, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Dan in Walnut Creek. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Steve. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Good. Thanks for taking my call today. Hey, I've got a question with regards to natural gas stocks. They seem to be going down quite a bit, and I don't know if some of this is from the regulations that the different cities and states are trying to put in with regards to natural gas in new buildings,
like they're trying to do right now in New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I've got the Devon, DVN, Liberty, LBRT, and Oneok. Is that how you pronounce it? OKE. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if I should hang on to these or what I should do.
Well, I think you should. You know, natural gas is a pretty clean energy, and solar power and all those other things are great, but they're nowhere near going to be enough. And natural gas is just going to be more and more important. And we'll be exporting a ton of natural gas in the coming years, especially to Europe. And we all know why, right? Because Europe has been relying on Russia, and that's not been a very good thing for them to do. And I thought it was always foolish that they ever did it. And I mentioned on the air years ago, I said, you know, when they were building out those lines, that was not smart. But natural gas, you got to remember that we are the Saudi Arabia of energy, natural gas, oil, coal. We have way more than everybody else in the world, especially natural gas. I think it was several hundred years of supply. So we're going to be exporting that all over the world, you know, liquefied natural gas. And I think that, you know, you just got to be in the right ones. And you got to remember, it's a commodity. Commodities, I think, are going to do well for the next few years, but it's going to be volatile. Commodities can be pretty volatile. I'm holding on to mine, but that's one of the reasons why I really, really, really want dividends. So you can live through the dry times when the stock goes down. Dan, appreciate the call. So yeah, I'd still like natural gas.
Do you have questions about FDIC security, mortgages, money market funds, losses to your retirement plans? Give us a call today, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Gene in North Carolina. Hi, Gene. How you doing?
Hey, Steve. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I think maybe about 5 to 10 years ago, the credit agencies, they downgraded the U.S. Treasury, the credit rating of the U.S. Treasury,
yes,
like one notch from almost perfect down one notch.
Yes,
and
it did.
Think it might have been due to whether it's the overall deficit or maybe even this debt ceiling type fighting of closing down the government. And I'm thinking that, you know, whether or not it closes down or not, just the fact that they're having a fight now over the debt ceiling, do you think that that might cause the credit agencies again to lower the U.S. credit rating, and therefore everything else being the same, it kind of dissuades foreign investment and it causes the U.S. Into treasuries and causes that the Treasury has to
pay more interest.
That the actual interest that they pay has to be more to attract the foreign buyers of Treasuries.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that it will. I do think it's a problem. If they let it go on where they can't come to a deal and raise a debt ceiling, I think you're going to see the agencies. And by the way, don't trust the agencies. You know, if you remember right, in 2008, and in 2000 with the .com, all those rated agencies and experts said to buy .com stocks. In 2008, they had the housing mortgages rated super high. Remember the CDOs and those things? And now, so don't necessarily buy into what they're saying, but they do affect the price of things. And I do think as we get closer to this default the first of the month, that they could downgrade the U.S. debt by a tick. But I think more importantly, I think interest rates are going to rise for our debt anyways because we're getting so much debt. It's still rising. What, $6 trillion more dollars in debt in the last couple of years? So people, you know, investors are going to look at our debt and say, well, yeah, U.S. is very strong, but you know, they have a huge deficit and debt problem. And therefore, if we're going to buy their bonds, we need more interest. And I think that's going to happen. I agree with you on that, Gene. I think it's going to happen. Let's go to Bill in Northern California. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Steve.
Hey, before I ask you about my stock, I don't know if you have enough time right now, but I was going to ask you about your main fund that you guys run in your program and how much cash you have in it currently, and how that's changed from like last year, and have you bought more stocks in the last year or just traded in and out of different ones, or what's happened there?
Well, you know, we have five different programs, and one, the most conservative, is all bonds that we buy and hold to maturity, and the other other end of that risk schedule is all stocks, 100% stocks. And so it depends on which program you're talking about. And we have one that's
I'll be talking about the stock fund
okay.
specifically.
Most of the stock funds that we have right now are almost fully invested. We probably have about 10%, 12% cash left because we've been slowly putting it back to work. Okay. So I think that, you know, you've heard me on the radio. I'm sure you heard Justin on the radio saying that this year is not going to be the greatest. But just like Warren Buffett, you buy when everybody else is a seller and you sell when everybody else is a buyer, and everybody's still pretty nervous with the market right now. So we need think it, you know, we think it's a good time to start thinking about getting back in the market full time. Okay? And you never should leave the market full time. We're going to go talk to Nick in Manhattan Beach. That's in Southern California. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Steve. Calling to chat about, I guess, the topic du jour, which is the coming debate over our raising our national debt ceiling. And just I basically want to talk about U.S. government debt in general. We've been in a persistent deficit. It's nothing new. I think last year the government spends about, you know, $6.3 trillion, but we only take in about $4.9 trillion in tax revenues.
Right.
So we're spending more than we're making as a country.
Yep.
And I guess we fund the deficit by borrowing, obviously, but what do we pay back those borrowed dollars in? I guess we essentially print it, the Federal Reserve prints it. And my question is, why do global investors who buy that government debt, why do they put up with this and demand such a low interest rate?
You know,
is it because we're basically the best option relative to other government debt, that we're more reliable? Is it something to do with the U.S. Navy? Is it something to do with our system of checks and balances? I'm wondering what the difference is. Thank you.
Yeah, the main reason is the U.S. dollar is a reserve currency of the world and solid and stable. Even in inflation terms, we don't have a lot of inflation versus other people's currency. Remember, the only difference is a dollar versus the euro versus the Japanese yen versus the Chinese yuan versus the Mexican peso. Or the Brazilian peso, which one do you think has less inflation and a stronger economy? This is so you got to step back and look at it from a macro point. What currency and what country is the most stable? And you have to answer us, even though I'm just as surprised as you as we're getting away with murder with how much with a lack of how much we as people demand for our interest rate for our federal debt. The government issues bonds, and they pay very, very low interest rates. They have been for years now, zero practically, and yet it's being purchased. Surprises the heck out of me. It's not a healthy way to be, I can tell you that. Now the debt is going to cost a lot more, and we have so much of it, it's going to eat more and more into our tax dollars. But think about this. Doesn't our government want inflation because they can pay back the debt in inflated dollars in the future, which is worth much less than it is now with inflation? They kind of want inflation, don't they? I mean, how are they going to pay back this debt? They're probably not ever going to pay back the debt, ever. They're just going to roll it more and more debt. At some point, they're going to have to, it's going to start affecting the economy big time, and they're going to have to do something. But it hasn't happened yet. Good question, though. Very good question. Appreciate it, Nick.
In today's world, a variety of factors are affecting the stock markets. Serious investors know building a secure financial future requires hard work and determination. That's why now, more than ever, when it comes to the planning, execution, and maintenance of your portfolio, you need InvestTalk. InvestTalk is a free download. Your participation makes it unique. Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Steve or Justin. This is Chris calling from Florida. I just had a quick question regarding the dollar and shorting it or going long the dollar. I was just wondering, like, how you guys go about doing that and what, like, the efficient way for a retail investor like myself would be to go about doing that, whether it's, you know, buying some puts or some calls on some indexes that track the dollar and whichever way they're trying to go, you kind of go against that or with that. Any insight would be helpful. I appreciate it. Thanks for everything you do. Have a good one.
Well, you might want to look at an ETFs. The ETFs, there's a ETF UUP, which is an exchange-traded fund seeking performance corresponding to the Invesco U.S. Dollar Index Bullish Fund Index. Okay, bullish on the dollar. I mean, it's going to go up. There, you can use an ETF. This one's bullish on the dollar. I'm not sure. There might be one that's bearish on the dollar out there. I'm not sure because I haven't looked. But you can even short this ETF, which would be bearish. You can short the ETF or go long this ETF, and there you go. It's very simple. It's much simpler than trying to, you know, use options and other kind of leveraged products. This to go, you know, straight long or short using this ETF if you want to. For some reason, I want to say there's an ETF that shorts the dollar out there. The ETFs, there's so many of them these days, it's hard to keep up with all the different ones that are out there. Now, if you have a question about a stock or an IRA, college savings plan, well, maybe buying a house, mortgages, reverse mortgages, we're here for you. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Hey, can I have your opinion on owning some big energy stocks like Exxon or Chevron versus owning this ETF XLE? Thank you so much.
Well, XLE is the Energy Select Sector Spider, exchange-traded fund seeking performance corresponding to the S&P Energy Select Sector Index. And that means you're going to have a lot of different energy companies in there. Okay? And therefore, that will, you know, in some sense, that's good because you're diversifying over a bunch of companies. And at some respects, it's bad because you're investing in companies that may be poorly ran or not be successful because it indexes a broad number of companies. I like Exxon and Chevron both because I like the dividends. You know me, if you've listened to me, I'm a dividend guy. Now, the problem is both these stocks have done very well, and Exxon's dividend now is only 3.3%. I think that's not the best. And Chevron's dividend, as you mentioned, is 3.8. But take a look at their charts, and you see they've done very, very well in the last year or two, especially with their dividend payments. So I like the energy. People think oil and natural gas is, you know, not the energy of the future, and I happen to disagree. I think it's going to be around 50 years from now these companies will still be here. You know, I realize that we'll have a lot of electric cars, but you got a big world out there, and as more economies and societies get stronger, they're going to need more and more energy. Okay, and I understand a lot of it will be clean energy. I understand that, and it's true. But they'll need more than clean energy is not the solution yet, that it can maybe in the future, because you can't have across your landscape solar panels enough to power everything you need. You know, wind is so unpredictable, and these are very expensive energy solutions right now, very expensive. And natural gas and oil are not expensive, comparatively speaking.
Hello, thank you for your podcast. I have found it educational and helpful over the years. I prefer lower risk investments. Most of my investments in fixed income, with a large part of this being in treasuries, mostly short term, 3 to 1 year. Because of the debt ceiling, I'm concerned that I have too much exposure in treasuries if I should be selling some of my treasuries. Any help or guidance
will be helpful. Thank you.
Well, if you are relatively conservative, right, treasuries are pretty much the most conservative investment you can make. Now, that they're not without risk. You've seen that with the commercial banks. You are still subject to duration risk, right? There's no credit risk. You're not going to not get your money back, but you are obviously going to be subject to a duration risk if you go out too far. Now, you're talking about 3 to 12 months. That's not long duration. It's very short duration. So I don't think you are having a lot there. Now, long term, treasuries are unlikely to be the best investment. It's usually going to be equities. And then in the bond space, there's likely to be better returns in things like corporate bonds. Now, both of those have a lot more volatility. But in an era where, you know, we have a lot of debt, and you go back in history and you say, what happened the last time we had 130%+ debt to equity, or debt to GDP ratio as a country? Well, that was post-World War II. What did we do? We did something akin to what Japan's done for a while now, which is yield curve control, right? Pinning rates at low levels so that we can inflate our way out of the debt. And that's likely the path forward for the Fed. Now, are they executing that today? No, they're not. But I do think they will eventually get there. So right now, are treasuries a good risk versus reward? Probably, right? Short-term treasuries, yield curves right around, you know, in the mid fives in the short term, call it 1 month. Then we go all the way down to about 5% going out 1 year. And so you're getting pretty decent yield right now. But that's not always going to stay. Remember, you're not locking in that for multiple years. I could easily see a year from now where your three-month treasury is yielding 2 or 3% if the Fed fully pivots to rate cuts. And then, you know, is that very attractive? No, it's not. So longer term, you're going to want a yield that keeps up with inflation. And so when we go back to, you know, Fed funds rates probably closer to 2 or 3, it's probably not going to keep up with long-term inflation. So that's where you want to take a little more risk, probably credit risk. High-grade corporates, still pretty conservative, not as conservative as treasuries. So that would be that next step up in risk that I'd probably take with some of your portfolio when treasuries are no longer yielding, you know, 5, 5.5%. So that would be my number one advice if you want to stay more on the conservative side. Thanks for the call.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461.